The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Hello and welcome to Urban Connections. Today I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. Donna is in Minnesota picking blueberries today. So in
Michigan.
And our distinguished guest today is Dr. Mark Bedell, Kansas City's newest superintendent and man about town.
Well, thank you. And Joe, I really appreciate you all having me here today.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself? I know you grew up in one of the most predominantly areas of New York where a lot of minorities didn't graduate. But can you tell our listeners a little bit about your history and what brought you to Kansas City?
Sure. I had an opportunity to briefly share a little bit with the 2,200 staff members at our convocation on Wednesday. Just a little bit about my background. I am the oldest out of eight kids, and I am the only one to make it past the ninth grade. I'm from Rochester, New York, and I was born to a 16-year-old mother who eventually dropped out of high school, very similar to a lot of some of our young ladies who end up becoming pregnant and don't necessarily have the resources and the support to graduate on time out of high school. And my father actually abandoned me, so I've never met him. I don't know who he is. I've been here 42 years now. My other seven siblings came from my stepfather. But growing up was very difficult, you know, a very humbling experience. And for many days, I didn't really understand how I would make it. I was a ward of the state. I dropped out of school as a second grader. I had a teacher who told me I was dumb, ugly, and wouldn't amount to anything. And she knew that I didn't have anybody who would come and advocate for me. And that really almost destroyed me, because generally what happens is you end up getting back into school, which I did after I became a ward of the state. And then I was placed into special education, which had nothing to do with my academic ability. There was more of an issue around some of the social and emotional deficits that I've experienced with various trauma and the things that I was seeing in my household and in my community. And, you know, I ended up moving in with the relative and lived in a house with eight of her kids, she and her husband, and then my brother and I. So in a house with 12 people, you can imagine how tough things were, how tight things were. And we did that for about 7 years before I moved back in with my mother. And, you know, my mother still was abusing drugs and those types of things. And ended up becoming homeless for a little while during my ninth grade year. And then eventually ended up living with my grandmother and really lived with her through all of my high school experience. But I was fortunate because I had some good people who came into my life. My best friend, parents, Lewis and Pat White. I had a teacher, two teachers, Mr. Barrett and Ms. Blaylock. They allowed for me to remove my defenses, lower my defenses, told me that I was intelligent, that I had an ability, but that I was allowing my frustrations to stifle the true academic growth that was in me. And eventually, they took me under their wings and made me believe that I could do more than I thought I could ever do. And then I ended up going to college. I had a successful college career at Fisk University, played basketball, had an opportunity to try out for the NBA. Of course, I didn't get that call back. But I also knew that these teachers had influenced me in a way that they told me that I would become a teacher one day. And I did go to college and ended up majoring in education and history. And then I went on to get a master's degree at Tennessee State University. And then ultimately finishing up with my doctoral degree at Nova Southeastern University, which is based in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. But I've had a very, very tough path that I had to travel to get here, And we could talk further about my experience, you know, if that's what you want to talk about, Joe, from an education standpoint. But that's a quick overview of my background and part of why I'm here, you know, today.
You mentioned one thing important. How important is a teacher in a student's life? It was those teachers that shaped and molded you that when, you know, a good teacher can do great things, but also one bad teacher can undo all those things that a good teacher has done. How important is that? You show how it was for you. How important is it for the children here in Kansas City to have good teachers?
It is absolutely critical. Because you think about the situation with some of our kids. If they are growing up like me, and some of them I've already spoken to, and they're absolutely going through some of the things that I've gone through, and they will tell you that they pretty much, you know, are the head of the household in many cases. You know, maybe there's a mother there, maybe there's not a father, maybe they're living with grandparents, and maybe some of our kids are on their own, they're homeless. And, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of these kids don't have to come to school. There's nobody forcing some of these kids to come to school. I didn't have to go to school. My grandmother was not keeping up with me. There was no accountability. But in essence, I went to school because I was simply hoping that there was going to be somebody there that could tell me that things could be better, that there was hope, and that would help me to believe that there was a way to get out of the situation that I was currently living through. But I also went because I knew there was structure. First of all, I knew I was going to have breakfast and lunch. So I was very thankful for that because that was not something that was happening at home. But I also knew that there was structure. And I tell people, even the most difficult kids that come to school, they come to school because they want discipline. They want structure. But it's how we have to go about giving it to them. You know, you can't approach them in a way that is going to degrade them or approach them in a way where you're basically saying that, you know, with a can't-do mentality with these kids, because they read through that. They hear enough of that. And so they want somebody that's going to, one, understand what they're going through, but then also build that relationship with them and then hold them accountable, because they want to be held accountable. But if they don't trust you, if they don't believe that you're sincere in your actions and your approach towards them, then this cycle that we have that's happening around the country with a lot of our urban schools, it just continuously recycles, and we will continuously have the poverty cycle of a lot of our urban children just continue. And it's a cycle that's very vicious, very cruel, and it's one that, you know, we can shake it, but I think we have to change how we interact and how we approach our kids in the way that we, you know, with our pedagogical practices and relationship building.
How can we, what is the most important thing we can do to impact and change that cycle, especially between the relationship between the parent and the child and between the teacher, the parent, and the child?
What I would tell you is we have to do a better job. I remember writing my dissertation, and there was a study in there from, I want to say, 2013, and it was a study that was focusing on pre-service teachers, which are teachers who are, in essence, in the process of finishing up their student teaching, and they're getting ready to eventually be hired to work in urban schools. And one of the things they found in this study was that a lot of these teachers did not necessarily live and experience life the way that the kids have our experience in life that they have to serve. And this study really talked about this guard that parents have. You know, we know in Kansas City, there's a history. We know that with the DSEG era, there were some things that really took place that harmed a lot of our parents, a lot of the folks that are now 30 to 40 years old, and they actually have children going into the system. So they've developed a high level of distrust for the school system, because it, in essence, at times failed, you know, a segment of the population within this city. And so, you know, we have to then now lead by example, we have to take it to the community. That's one of the things I always talk about as a superintendent. I'm not a traditional superintendent. I think in the month in a week that I've been here, people are starting to see that I'm out in the community. I want to be visible. You know, I want them to know that, you know, I'm not here to use this as a stepping stone. If that was the case, I would not have put my kids in this school system. And knowing that I want them to become graduates of the school system, but I want them to know that we are planning on being a very piece of the fabric that really builds this community up and add value to the community. And so what we have to be able to do is, as a school system, what are we doing to do more outreach? What are we doing to go out into the community, knock on doors, find some time to sit down and just talk with people and let our families know that we're here. I know the past was cruel in some cases on some of our families, but we have to start looking forward in terms of what we're doing now to serve the kids as we are now shaping their futures.
You know, some of that outreach, you've been out seen in the community, and I know there's a story floating around that one of your students, he put the Allen Iverson crossover move on you. So can you elaborate? I know all great leaders have some piece of relaxation. You know, President Obama plays golf. I know you were a Division I player, as you said, and you loved to play basketball, and you found out you were playing some of your students. Can you tell listeners a little bit about that experience?
Yes, and so let me clarify a couple of things with this story, because it's really interesting how the story changes and it gets worse every time somebody, you know, talk about what happened that day. You know, I was a former Division III basketball player. I averaged 28 points a game my senior year at Fisk University, and I led Division III in scoring, and I had an opportunity to try out for a couple of NBA pro camps. Of course, it was definitely a different experience. It's one that I can share with a lot of our kids who may have hoop dreams and wanting to play pro, that, you know, I could tell folks how difficult and how cutthroat it is when you get out into those camps, and that it's a lot more about not having the skill set but being able to think through the game. And, I mean, there's a lot of intellectual situational understanding that individuals have if they really want to be able to survive and play at the professional level. But we were playing basketball at the Cleaver Y, and I was just out there, wasn't going too hard. I was kind of like, man, these kids are young, but this is a great opportunity. And I didn't know any of the kids, and this young man made a move. I had a grade 2 sprain on my MCL probably about 3 months ago. He made a move, and I kind of almost bit, and I felt a little pain in my knee, and I said, "Hey, hold on, everybody, stop, hold on." So I asked the young man, I said, "Man, young man, what's your name?" He said, "Derek." I said, "What grade are you in?" He said, "The 11th grade." I said, "What school do you go to?" He said, "I go to Central." I said, "Hey, my man, do you know who I am?" I said, "I am your new superintendent, and you out here trying to embarrass me and hurt me?" I said, "Man, you about to get suspended in school. It hadn't even started yet." And so we went on, we laughed about it, and we went on and we really then, you know, got into playing, playing and really had some good games. And it's those types of things for me that I think will allow for me to connect with kids in a different way, because now when I go to Central High School, I will go and look for Derek. He will remember that he and I had an opportunity to fellowship over the basketball court. And he knows, hey, this is somebody that I got to see the human side of. This guy who's in a pretty high level position, he got to see the human side of me. And I think too often our kids don't get to see that out of us. They don't get to understand. They only see the suit, or they hear us on the radio or see us on TV, and they don't necessarily understand that there was definitely a journey to get here, and, you know, this is an end product of that journey. But basketball gives me an opportunity to do that with a lot of our kids, because a lot of our kids love basketball. But then to sit down and just talk with them after it's over with around, you know, what were their experiences like in school. And, you know, I'm in a position where I have power to make change and to make sure that I'm listening to kids around what we need to do to better serve them. And I think that's what's very important and critical.
We're going to take a short commercial break, station break, and we'll be right back with more of our conversation with Dr. Mark Bedell. You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
The neighbors of the gas station at 31st and Cleveland have been complaining about foul smells for years. On the next Eco Radio KC, Missouri State Representative Brandon Ellington brings us up to speed. Monday at 6 p.m. On the next From the Vault.
We shall overcome. Those were the voices of a group of Negro and white people on Edisto Island, singing the theme song of the Highlander Folk School.
We present a 1960 documentary on the Highlander Folk School, Wednesday morning at 5.
We're back. This is 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City's Community Radio. This is Joseph Jackson, your host for Urban Connections today. Donna Wolf is on the Blueberry Farm, and our guest today is Dr. Mark Bedell, Kansas City's newest superintendent. You have been superintendent now for 43 days. What has been some of your most important things that you've looked at that you want to change and do differently within the community, and some of the things that you know you're still looking at evaluating at this point?
Well, one of the things that I'm really concerned about and want to focus on is just this mindset of how we approach things as a school system. I'm big on customer service. I'm big on accountability. As a central office, our job is to do what we are supposed to do, and that's to get out and support our schools. I'm not the type of leader that believes in top-down style management. I believe that we have to be able to tell our schools what it is that we want them to do. But I believe they need to be able to customize that at the school level to really meet the needs of the kids that they serve. So I don't believe in a cookie cutter approach to how we conduct schooling. That's never worked for me, and I've worked in environments where people have tried that approach. You may be able to get some growth, but to really have sustainable growth means that you really have to customize the learning experiences for kids. And so I want to take that approach and really focus on this more of a can-do mentality, and something I talked about on Wednesday, which is us approaching things from a resiliency lens. What does that mean? That means let's go in here and figure out, I told teachers, how do we change the way that we interact with kids on the first day? And to me, the most important thing that we can do with our students is, instead of telling them, outlining the rules and telling them what they can't do, how about telling them what are the things that they are permitted to do, and start building those working relationships with kids, and then focusing on instruction on day one. I think that it begins to send a message to our kids that, you know, no, we're here. We don't want to limit you, because I think kids are told so many times what they are not allowed to do, what they can't do, and then they just find a way to prove to you that they can do it. And generally that results in us not really focusing on teaching, and more of us focusing on discipline management and classroom management. And so I think it's a delicate process that you have to utilize in order to do that. And I know as a teacher, that's what worked for me. I was one of those individuals. I told my principal, give me the most difficult kids. And I was a second and third grade teacher. But then I ended up moving up and working with the most difficult kids at an alternative school for 3 years. And that approach worked for me. And I know that it's an approach that can work for us. So really focusing on us being more service-oriented, but also having this can-do mentality around how we conduct schooling, allowing our principals to have autonomy and some freedom to be innovative in how they customize the learning experiences for the kids that they serve. That's the number one thing for me. And I think if we do that well, that helps us to obtain becoming an accredited school system that will result in us being that rating being sustained. I don't want to become accredited and then we're falling down the next year. So the practices have to change, and they have to become sustainable in our schools. And that's the first one I will tell you. The second one is this piece that I'm learning in this city and talking with even some of my teachers, some of my students, this sense of hopelessness. Like, there's just this belief that nothing can be done, that you know, the urban core kids don't have the ability to be successful. The school system doesn't have it together. The school system doesn't know how to properly educate our kids. And I mean, that hurts me. That hurts me because that was one of the things I heard when I came here and was in the process of interviewing. I told people that I was an educational researcher. Tell me about the Kansas City public school system. And people said, I wouldn't put my kids in that school system. Here's the other options that you have out here. But there are actually good things happening in our school system. And I know that. And that's part of the reason why I have enrolled my kids into this school system, because there are good schools, there are good programs, there are programs that people are graduating from, and they're going into this world and they're doing phenomenal things, and I don't think we do a good enough job of telling those stories.
You're absolutely correct, because what a lot of people may not know is that Lincoln is the number one rated school in the state. It's been a blue ribbon school for the last 3 years. It's ranked in the top 300 schools in the nation.
I mean, 99 in the country.
Exactly. 99. So there are positive schools. You know, we have a great foreign language program. We have one of the few Montessori programs that is free. While in some areas, if you want a Montessori education, you pay for it. Our district has one that is actually free. To do all of these things that you're looking at, you definitely have to bring in and engage the community. That's an important piece. What is your vision for doing that?
So one of the things that I'm focusing on, as many of you are aware, we have our superintendent comes in and we have a 100-day plan. And that 100-day plan allows for us to focus on some of those critical communication areas and outreach that the school system should be conducting. And so part of what I'm going to be doing here, I don't know if we scheduled it yet, but it will be scheduled here very shortly, is we're going to be going out into the community and we're going to be conducting listening and learning tours. And we're going to go into each of the geographical areas where we're going to give the community an opportunity to come together, to hear from me, you know, to tell me what's been their experience as parents or even former students of the school system. What is it that they believe we need to do differently? All of those will allow for me to get the information that I need to report out to the board at the end of my 100-day plan and then begin to figure out how do we now start to create our 5-year strategic plan. Our 5-year strategic plan will be our theory of action that basically will guide the work that the Kansas City Public School will do. And what we want to do is, based on some of the things I've learned and the common themes that I'm hearing out of those listening and learning tours, we're going to then come back and we're going to come back to all of our communities and we're going to give our community members an opportunity to talk to us about the goals that we need to establish, what are the major areas we need to focus on, and then ultimately, how do we create our vision and mission that is truly a Kansas City developed collaborative process. And so my goal is to make sure that as a superintendent, people say, what's your vision? And I can tell you I have a vision, and I can tell you what I think should go into that 5-year strategic plan. I've worked in 2 of the largest school systems in the country. I truly understand how to conduct schooling, but it's not my plan. Right? If I'm going to get buy-in from the community, then the community has to be at the table in this process of telling us what we should be doing to make sure that our kids graduate globally competitive and that they are going to college and going into the military, or that they're truly career ready. And that plan has to be one that's developed with this community as a whole. So we'll be going back out and we'll be engaging the community in that process. In addition to what I plan on doing during those listening and learning tours.
Okay, that's definitely great.
Joe, can I ask a question? Sure. Does that plan include even if the community desires a change in curriculum from what the types of textbooks and the types of materials that are currently used in the school system? I have a sister who has now decided to homeschool her 2 children. She just moved to Belton and she just, you know, was really concerned about there. So not in this, you know, particular school district, but just the sense of what is actually being taught and wanting her children to know more truth a greater perspective, etc. And so does that plan include the possibility of really changing the curriculum?
I think that's a very powerful question. I would say to you that as we engage the community, I'm certain those things will come up. I'm certain that things will come up around we've given these kids all of these laptops. You know, what are we doing? The curriculum has to be adjustment. There has to be a conversion with the curriculum somehow, some way. Because it to me, then it offsets us if we're going to have these electronic devices in the hands of every single one of our kids. Then there needs to be a digital curriculum. There needs to be some type of curriculum, whether it's a hybrid curriculum where you can still do some paper and textbook, you know, or it's a fully digital curriculum where everything that you're interfacing with is based on kids being able to go home, pull up their textbooks right online, and all of those resources are available to our kids to truly remove this whole brick and mortar process, and that learning can truly be 24/7. So I can tell you that I'm certain that will come out as one of the themes, and there will be, I know every strategic plan, there's going to be a focus on curriculum, instruction, and assessment. And so I could tell you, I would be shocked if it's not, if the community doesn't see that.
You're moving now from 1211 to 29th and Truth, so you're moving right into the heart of the city, which makes it more accessible for families. It's right on the bus line. Can you tell us a little bit about that, and what are your feelings about that?
I would tell you I've been extremely excited about that location. It's I tweeted out on the very first day on the job that 2901 Truce equals more accessibility for our family and for our community, and that's exactly what it is. And I think if there were some listeners who had an opportunity to participate in our back-to-school festival, that was a prime example. I was told that we probably served nearly 5,000 families with backpacks and some uniforms and some other items to really help our kids be prepared for school. But that was a great turnout for us doing that in our first year. The support that we had from the community, the sponsors, Aetna, and I know Blue Cross Blue Shield, Costco, there were a lot of major donors out there that helped us to make that a reality. And because of where it was located, it was much more of an accessible venue for our families. And so I'm ecstatic about where we are. We're in the heart of the community, and that's where a school system should be. That's just the bottom line.
You're in a location now where all roads and all modes of transportation lead right to your location. And if you ride the 27th Street bus, it's a short two-block walk. If you ride the 31st Street bus, it's a short, about 2 to 3 block walk. So there's multiple means to be able to get there. And once you get there, there's not a fight for parking as it was downtown.
No issues with parking. You have Operation Breakthrough right down the street, further down the street. There's a lot of medical services. And so everything that our families need is right within that vicinity. I can tell you, I was pretty excited once I started on July 1 and saw that we had already moved. And hopefully we'll see eventually if there's more participation with our board meetings and some of the major decisions that are being made as a result once we move, because we're still doing some construction, and we know that our board room will be there. We're going to build a board room, and I think that would hopefully help us to increase more participation from the community as a whole in what's happening with the decisions that are being made.
We will invite some of the community if they have some questions and comments they'd like to call in and ask Dr. Bedell. Our number is 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-KKFI. One of the most important parts of this is the mentoring aspect, showing our young people that they can succeed. I know you brought in a new principal at my alma mater Central, Dr. Madry, and he's essentially put out an all call for anybody who is a former alumni to come in, and we're coming in numbers to help them out and show the students. So how important is that mentoring aspect?
Yeah, the mentoring aspect is huge. If anybody has had an opportunity to read a little bit on my bio or even some of the work that I've done, there's a lot of conversation around mentoring. In fact, there was an article that was, I guess, is in the newspaper today on, from the Kansas City Star that has talked a little bit about the positive start that we've had. But if you go online and look at that article, there's one comment in there. I usually don't go to comment sections, but I went to this comment for some crazy reason around 2 a.m. and there's a comment in there from one of my former assistant principals in Baltimore County, and she talks about the mentoring, the power of mentoring, and that, you know, what I talked about and what people said in that article was the truth, was that it's critical for me that we put positive adult advocates in the lives of our kids. And as I've stated earlier, they want that relationship. They want to know that there are people out there who genuinely care for them. Every kid that I've mentored in my lifetime, all of my kids have gone across the stage. I want to say, in terms of the kids that I've mentored at the high school level, all of them but one. My first kid did not graduate this year, and I did everything in my power to fight for that young man. And he just wouldn't come to school. And I've had some very difficult cases because those are the ones that I take on because I know that I have a gift. God has gifted me to be able to connect with kids in a way that a lot of people just simply are not able to do because of what I've gone through. But I need help, and our school system's looking for that support with mentoring. And we'll definitely keep you all posted on where we are in that development.
We have a caller. Caller, go ahead. Can you state your name and where you're calling from? You're on the air. We can barely hear you, Imani. Hold on. I can barely hear you. Yes. I can barely hear you, Imani. It's you're coming in real, real faint.
Okay.
No. Now you go. There you go.
Okay. I am the director of a nonprofit educational enrichment program that provides STEM enrichment in an after-school setting. And my big concern is, I know that, you know, your challenge is trying to make sure you meet the state requirements for academic achievement. But in terms of STEM, I'm really concerned that kids all over the country are falling behind in terms of being able to be career ready for careers in engineering, computer programming, science, and finance. And is any of that part of your plan, or how can you incorporate those higher sciences and mathematics into a curriculum that really has to abide by state requirements?
Yeah, I don't see that being a difficult lift. I know financially that's where you will run into some of your concerns, but what I will tell you is we're in the process right now of applying for some school improvement grants, and we've been pretty successful, at least in all of the school systems that I've worked in. We've been very successful in being able to create academies that will be designed to push kids into, you know, STEM or the other various academies. That's an area that I know we need to focus on more. Not only do we need to focus on it just from the general position, but even when we're looking at our female students and the lack of our female students who are taking advantage of going into that field. What I would tell you is there's a place in my heart for STEM because I was the principal of an engineering high school. The high school was called Booker T. Washington High School and the High School for Engineering Professions. And the kids who came out of my high school component, it was a school within a school, so kind of similar to what we're doing over at Southeast and with the African-centered college preparatory program. The kids who came out of that engineering program participated in NSBE. They went on to a lot of tier one universities, and it was something that was a major focus of mine. And I would love to see, as we're writing these grants and we're applying for the resources that we would then be able to put those components into some of our schools. And the expectation is you're not going to put STEM in every single school, but I believe we need to have a school or two that offers STEM, and then there's other options in those other neighborhood schools that would best meet the needs of kids. So that is something that as a school system we're looking into, and in fact we just had a meeting with my entire cabinet to talk about those career pathways. And I would tell you that as we are moving forward, you know, there's the STEAM component. And so one of the things that we've done is we partnered with, you know, we're sponsoring the Urban Neighborhood Academy, which is our charter school that's sponsored through our school system. But that's their major focus. Their major focus is STEAM. So you're also adding arts into there as a component. And so we're going to continue to support them and see how that rolls out there in their first year of existence. And we want to see that if that's something that works out extremely well, then that's something we can look to replicate even further.
Okay, we got another caller. Caller, can you tell us your name and where you're calling from? And what's your question?
Hello,
for Dr.
Yes? This is Sharon. I'm calling from South Kansas City.
Can you tell us your question for Dr. Bedell? Go ahead.
Yes, you mentioned, well, you talked about your experience, and it is definitely impactful, and you talked about making that impact on the kids. I just wanted to know if you have already, or if you plan to perhaps have a citywide assembly where you share your experience with kids. I think it could be life-changing for a lot of kids who understand where you've come from and where you've come to. And then beyond that, any plans to write a book so you can get that story out to even more kids and make an even bigger difference?
This is very interesting that you asked that question. Yes, ma'am. My first school is Northeast High School. I plan to ensure that I touch all of our schools throughout this school year. So my first motivational speech will be with Northeast High School. And I believe we are scheduling that for sometime in September once things settle down with enrollment and kids are pretty much set in place. But I plan on doing that through all of our schools. I've already been approached to go and speak in other states, and I've had to decline because, like I told my board, my job is to make sure that I'm focusing on Kansas City first. In terms of your question around the book, yes, ma'am, I have already started writing the book, and my wife and I, we know that we need to go ahead and finish up on that. We've been working on it. I really want to talk to people in that book in terms of moving from being a dropout in the second grade, from dropout to superintendent, you know, and I think it's a heck of a story, and then really articulating that journey in there, but then eventually looking at some of the research that I've done and with my dissertation, being able to share with people how you can crack and break down the barriers that have really prevented a lot of kids from the urban core across the country from being as successful as they should be.
Dr. Bedell, children here come to school 2 years behind. How do we begin to address the learning gap so we're not consistently playing catch up, but we're actually being able to give instruction and teach in every classroom every day?
Yeah, it's a great question. If many of you may be aware, the first day that I was on assignment, July 1, I made an announcement. My first press conference, official press conference, was around us offering pre-K for up to 1,100 students tuition free. And we truly believe that that's going to give our kids an opportunity to start the school year when they, you know, after they've taken 2 years of pre-K, 3 and 4, it will give them an opportunity to then be on a track where they can take a more rigorous curriculum track. And we know that if our kids are coming in behind, then we're already in the process of having to be reactive. And so I figured, let's start this small. But ultimately, my goal is to see that any of our kids who are in pre-K, eventually, what would that eventually look like and what that cost would be, you know, as we could eventually be able to offer universal pre-K. And I'm hoping that the state will do their part around seeing that this becomes a reality statewide.
I know that's one of it was one of President Obama's initiatives, but when they begin to look at the cost of what universal pre-K would cost, then that was the downside of it, because it would be billions of dollars added to educational budgets, and at a time when just the national budget is stretched, it would be real difficult. So that's one of those things. I know we've got a caller who's got a question. Caller, can you tell us your name and where you're calling from?
Hello.
Hello, yes. Yes, can you tell us your name and where you're calling from?
This is Sharon. I'm calling from South Kansas City. I'm sorry, I was disconnected before.
Okay.
I wanted to ask the superintendent if you've heard of the 30 Million Words Project. It's actually a project that came out of University of Kansas looking at the language gap in the homes of children who are underprivileged.
Yeah, I've read a little bit about it. I'm not certain that we actually have taken it and started utilizing it in the school system. That's a question that I will probably need to follow up with my staff on.
Yeah, just wanted to bring that to your attention, the 30millionwords.org.
Okay.
I think you'll be pretty fascinated, and the authors are out of this area. Thank you so much.
Thank you
so much. So we'll have to probably get into this a little bit after our break. You told an interesting analogy when we met the first time. You called it the three F's, W and I, faith, family, friendships, integrity, and work. And I would like for you to talk about that. We'll go ahead and take our break and then come back and have you talk about that a little bit, expound into that, and maybe finish up with that. This is 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Urban Connections. I'm your host today, Joseph Jackson. Dinah is on the Blueberry Forum. And we'll be here with Dr. Bedell, and we'll be right back after this short station break.
Support for KKFI provided by the 5th Annual Women's Equality Week, August 21st through August 28th. Pushing back, marching forward. Women's suffrage turns 96 August 26th, and Women's Equality Week Coalition presents a week of events celebrating women's achievements. Featuring the film Equal Means Equal, Friday, August 26th at 5:30 p.m. at Union Station's IMAX Theater. For more information, go to facebook.com/womensequalitygkc. You can also follow them on Twitter at WEGKC.
And we're back. This is 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City's Community Radio, and this is Urban Connections with our guest today, Dr. Mark Bedell, Kansas City's newest superintendent. And before we went to our station break, can you have a little pedagogy that you go by. You call it faith, family, friends, integrity, and work. Can you expound and tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things I know one of the previous callers asked, you know, have you gone out and conducted speeches with large groups of students? One of the things that I had the ability to do prior to starting in Kansas City was to keynote a big event at Towson University with all of our kids who were graduating with some type of honor in career technology education. And so I gave them this speech as we were getting ready to send them out into the next phase of their journeys as young adults. And I said to them that there's five balls in life. And I talked about these five balls, and one of them is faith. You know, and faith is very critical. Whatever your faith is, whatever your belief is, you know, there's going to come times in life when you need to depend on that. And, you know, don't ever lose that perspective. Don't ever let that fall to the wayside. And then I talked about family. So at the end of the day, all we have when things start to go bad and things become difficult is family. Family tends to stand by you, and you would hope that there are some relatives out there who will have your back. You know, even when you make those mistakes, they are there to have your back and to encourage you. And then you have friends. And this ball, you know, of friendship is important. Oftentimes, you know, we make new friends. People enter our lives at different points, at times when you don't really understand why they came into your life. But I think as you get older, you start to reflect that this person came into my life and it was a specific reason why they came into my life. But, you know, your friends are those individuals that are there for you when you need to talk to them. And there may be opportunities and times when you just simply don't want to share certain things with family. But then you have integrity. And I always tell people that integrity is one of the things that, can make or break you in terms of your character. I tell people that I'm a man that maintains a high level of integrity. I may not know the answer, and I will tell you I don't know it. I think people sometimes figure that you get into these positions, you're CEO, and you're supposed to know everything, but we're just like everybody else. You know, that we're not perfect, and so I'm not willing to compromise my integrity to tell people stuff that's not true. I'm not willing to tell people the answer that they want to hear. In every case, I'm going to be very honest and transparent with you, and at the end of the day, that generally generates respect. So all you have as a human being is your integrity, and once that's compromised, you're in trouble. And then you have this fifth ball, and this fifth ball is called work. And sometimes we allow for work to consume us, which ultimately then allows for the other four areas in life to be compromised. But I said all of these are balls, right? And so those first four, faith, family, friends, integrity, that ball is made out of glass. And what happens is when you drop that ball, sometimes it's almost impossible to take that ball and fix it back to the way that it was in its original form. And then you have work. And work is one of those situations where we all need it. We know we have to do it, but we can be efficient. We can balance our schedules in a way where we don't compromise the other four, because when you drop that work ball is made out of rubber. It's going to drop and it's going to always remain intact. But if you drop your faith, you don't focus on your faith, you don't focus on your family, you don't focus on your friends, and you don't maintain your integrity, those are a lot harder to repair. And it's a message that I really believe in sharing with our young youth and even with adults in life. That we have to make sure that we take those first four things and realize that those are going to always be there and they're going to be important. Work is work. And so how do you balance that and make sure that you're living a fruitful life that truly allows for you to be a value add to others and not allow for work to ultimately consume you and dictate who you are to become in life?
I was impressed when I heard you talk about that, and I knew that was one thing that I definitely wanted to get out, because that's a message, as you said, that not only do our young people need to hear that, but some of our adults need to hear that, because it's that one ball of integrity that's the one ball that if you lose that, you don't have anything else.
You're gone. Absolutely.
So, and if we have any callers, anyone wants to call in and get the question in before our time is up. Our number again is 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-KKFI. So as you begin your tenure here in Kansas City, what are some of the things that you hope to accomplish for the community and for the school district?
Well, I want to develop this culture of trust. I want people to believe that we are a first-class school system. Our outputs demonstrate that in everything that we do. And it's part of the reason why, as I come in and I'm looking at our systems and I'm looking at some of the things we have in place, you know, I realize that there's always room for improvement. You know, I told the viewers earlier today, listeners earlier today, that I was a principal of a very difficult school that had 600 of our neighborhood kids, and then 400 were engineering kids. And I had a phenomenal engineering teacher in there, and one of the things he talked about was the spiral method. He would tell the kids that in engineering, things can always get better. So even though when you think you have the best product, in engineering, that's the part of research and being able to make it better. And so I've taken that spiral method mentality into how I look into things here in Kansas City. And I'm saying, are we doing this the best way? Is this the most efficient? Is this the most effective? Is this what's in the best interest of children? And most importantly, will it give us a return on the investment? So if we're spending money, what's the return? And ultimately, how does that translate to student academic outcomes? Are our kids being successful academically, socially, and emotionally? And so That's one of the things that I really want to come in here and really focus on, is that we are fine-tuning and that we're a polished school system in everything that we do, and then being able to convey that to the community. That they, I don't want them to say, well, that's Kansas City. That's what you should expect out of Kansas City public schools. Those days are over with, and it's going to take time. We're going to put structures in place to ensure that that's how we operate, and people will begin to see that through examples. And I think a lot of people saw that on Wednesday with the presentation that we put out around the direction that we want to go as a school system.
Having served on the board and served with Dr. Covington, being one of the individuals that hired Dr. Green, what do you say to the people in the community that when the first job offer comes for the next bigger or better job, that what do you say to them that you are committed to this job? So in 2 years, you've signed presumably a 3-year contract. So in 2 years, when the next job offer comes, that you plan, you said your children plan to grad, you want your children to graduate from here, you plan to be here. What do you say to them?
One of the things I will say is job offers came even after the announcement took place on the 20th from at least two other school systems. And you know, I immediately told them that I haven't entered into a contract agreement yet with the Kansas City Public School System. But as a man of integrity, I'm not interested in even entertaining those other opportunities with search firms that had reached out to me, because they saw some of the things that happened with Paseo and how well that interview went. And what I can share with this community is I don't know how else to explain to people that I plan on being here, because my kids are in the 8th and 9th grade. That's 5 years at minimum, because both of those kids need to graduate from this school system. So I plan on being here, and I have a kindergartner here. We're buying a house. I don't know when's the last time a superintendent bought a house in this city. I think it's a very foolish investment to say that after 3 years we're going to get up and leave. And we just bought a house, and I can't move my kids. My wife said, I'm not interested in you're turning us into a military family. I'm not interested in that happening. I worked in Houston for 12 years. I worked in Baltimore County for 4. This move here needs to be one where I want to be able to demonstrate to people that I am going to be committed here. And I get it. It's not as big of a market as other school systems. But I know that there are, if people want you, they'll do what they need to do to keep you. And if I'm wanted here, I'm willing to be here. I'm willing to perform. And it's not always, all money is not good money. I know that from playing dominoes. Sometimes, you know, your family is what's more important, and making sure that you're here for your family is what's critical for me. I don't want my kids then regretting that here you didn't keep your promise. And my wife is happy. She's ready to start her law practice here, her own thing. And so we're going to be a value add to this community. And I don't think you come and make those kind of investments to just leave when the next opportunity comes. Will I be here forever? Who knows? Probably not. That just doesn't happen in urban school systems. Can I be here for 10 years? Absolutely. I would love to. And we'll see what happens. But I know I have to perform, too. I mean, you can't expect the board to keep me around and I'm here hurting kids. And so my intentions is to do my part to make sure that I'm adding value and that I'm bringing the right people and promoting the right people, putting the right people in our schools so that our kids can be successful. And if that's happening, then my job is to do some legacy work here to create a world-class school system that will not only compete with the charters and the private schools, but as people are moving in here, that becomes a viable option. I want the Kansas City Public Schools to be an option that people can say, this school has turned it around, and you know what? There are some schools that you need to think about putting your kid in. Instead of saying, go to Crossroads, go to Academy Lafayette, I want our school to be the school system to be the school system of choice.
That is definitely a powerful statement. One thing that you said when you were, I was there at Paseo when you were doing your public interview, and there was a question, and you begin to talk about your faith a little bit, where that it's one of those things where it's not something that I've ever seen anybody who's being the person of integrity talking about the totally, you know, volunteering at the church, being a member of the security. Can you elaborate and tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I had to make some changes in my life. Like I tell people, nobody's perfect on this earth. Every single one of us have made mistakes and we've fallen short of whatever it is that we wanted to do. Everybody. And what I tell people is that I don't want us to get in front of kids acting as if we're perfect and as if we've never made mistakes. So I know recently in my life I made a lot of changes. There's a lot of things that I've changed in my life, you know, just to become more stronger from a faith standpoint. I think people were shocked when I said, when the question came up, how would you work with civic-based organizations and faith-based organizations? And I said, let me be very clear with everybody. I'm a Christian. And if it's not for the Lord, I'm not here today having this conversation. I became much more active in my church. You know, I did serve on the security team within my church. And I wanted to just, once again, I always talk about value add. I wanted to be a value add to my church. And so my wife and I, we're big on that. We raise our kids under the Christian experience. And I could tell you that by doing that, it has really just changed my life. A lot of blessings have just been placed in my lap. This Kansas City opportunity placed in my lap because of changes that I know I've made spiritually, and really trying to become the spiritual leader in my household. So I don't have a problem, you know, letting people know where I stand with that. But ultimately my job is to live the best life I can live, to do the most that I can do with the time that I have here, and not to take any of this for granted, because this can be taken away with just the stroke of a pen. And so I don't take none of this for granted.
Well, we're almost up for our time. Is there anything that you would like our listeners to know? Is your closing comments, Dr. Bedell?
Sure. The only thing I would ask is, as we are, I'm asking people to trust us with your kids. My three kids are enrolled into this school system, and I think as a superintendent, my job is to lead by example. That I'm here. I am a down-to-earth individual. I want my staff to portray themselves and to come out and interact with our community the same way. And ultimately, we want to partner with you all to do our part to help this city move forward. We need you. We need your kids in school. A 65% graduation rate is completely unacceptable. So I'd like to line up 10 kids and then tell, I want somebody to pick out who are those four kids that we're going to tell to go home because they're not graduating. We need support. We need your help. And we need those kids in school on a daily basis. Our attendance rates aren't where they need to be. And that's stuff that we know the community can help us with.
Well, thank you, Dr. Bedell, for being our guest today. And next week, our guest is going to be Central High School newest principal, Anthony Madry. So we're looking at, definitely if you're beleaguered and know somebody graduated from Central, we know we have a lot of Lincoln alumni and Lincoln haters, but we know we have to, Eagles fly high, and we always so proud. So for Urban Connections, we're hope you glad to tune in today. So for Donna, who's on the Blueberry Farm, and for Ebony, who's been our board operator today, we thank our guest, Dr. Bedell, and we look forward to it. And please turn in next week and be right after us. Be MC Richardson, Lincoln alumni, for guests who's coming to Kansas City.
Thank you.